Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 104. I'm your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
I'm here and I'm ready to Yeti.
Excellent. We are back, of course, to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. And since we were off last week, we have a whole bunch of stuff to catch up on this week. We have new games to discuss. We have new release news to talk about. There's even some new hardware to discuss.
Man, oh man.
And then we've got this week's big topic, which is going to be Nintendo Holy Grail games. Games that it seems like we might not ever get, but we really hope we will. But before we discuss that, let's kick things off with some game impressions.
Let's do it.
Specifically, just a couple of days ago, we got the long-awaited release, finally, of Sonic Mania on Switch.
Woo!
Yeah, I second that opinion. I've been playing this game as much as I could ever since I got my hands on it earlier today, and unfortunately mine arrived a little bit late because Amazon likes to screw me over like that. But from what I've played, I am really, really enjoying it so far. And for those that aren't aware, yes, this is indeed the true successor to 16-bit Sonic. Or perhaps more accurately, this is maybe the evolution of 16-bit Sonic. This is what 32-bit Sonic maybe could have been like if Sega had pursued that route on the Saturn instead of trying to go 3D and then, you know, skipping a generation until Sonic Adventure came out. But, you know, if they continued on, maybe this is what we would have gotten. Because it feels a lot like the 16-bit games in a lot of ways, but it also feels better than the 16-bit games in a lot of ways. Like, it's that idea, but refined and brought into the modern era,
yep.
And I am just having a blast with it so far. A blast processing.
Oh, man, you stole my joke.
So what do you think? You've been playing it too, right?
Yeah, it's good. It just feels like a game that you never got to play. Like, somehow it was hidden somewhere.
Yeah, it's like some lost Sonic game from ages gone by.
Yeah, but like you said, it feels like it's even better than what you remember because they've used all the tricks of, you know, modern programming and processing power really is probably the main way to say it. But yeah, there's just like all these little, you know, nuances that you're like, whoa. And even like down to like Sonic's like idle animations and stuff like that, or you get too close to a ledge. You know, it really just
got all those little touches in there, just like the old games did. But, you know, they're better animated and, you know, got more nuance to them now.
Right. And even like there's little Easter eggs in there that we could talk about in a minute.
Oh, yeah.
But just everything is on point and it's great.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I would describe this as a roller coaster thrill ride of hills and tubes and loops and springboards and elevators. But it's also really well paced, where you're not just holding right to go through the levels. Yeah. There are sections where you have to stop and use well-timed jumps, and you have to think before you move. Plus, the game looks absolutely gorgeous. It's just color and spectacle and, you know, almost sensory overload.
Yeah.
And there are couple times where it's like, I'm not really sure what's going on here, but it sure does look really, really cool.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, the level design is great too. And I mean, there was like one level where I ended up going left so many times. I was like, how am I even ever going to finish this level?
Because level was that?
I think it was like two or three, like act one. I think you're going around in these little tubes, and I just was like, oh my lord. I just felt like I kept going backwards. So, anyway.
The chemical plant?
Yes, I think that's it.
Oh, yeah, it's a great level. That's another one of the things that's great is that it has all these nods to past games.
Right.
So it has all these levels that are inspired by previous Sonic games from the Genesis. You know, we open with the Green Hill Zone from Sonic 1. We go into the chemical plant from Sonic 2. Hydro City from Sonic 3 is in there. And one of the ones that really blew me away was it had the Stardust Speedway from Sonic CD. Sonic CD is my favorite classic 2D Sonic game, and I totally did not expect that was going to be in there. So that was a really excellent treat.
Now,
for
that's
me.
The one where you go around sort of in 3D and you are chasing the gem.
Well, that's in there as a bonus level. So, yes, it has that homage in there because that's what that game's bonus stages were like. But the Stardust Speedway is just a whole separate level that you'll get to later in the game. It even has, you know, nods to the time travel aspect of Sonic CD, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
If you haven't got there yet, you'll have a, you know, excellent time when you do.
Sweet.
And the other thing that I loved, you know, when it comes to the homages was in the chemical plant zone, how one of the bosses is like, suddenly you are fighting Dr. Robotnik in the Mean Bean Machine.
I know, I got there and I was like, what in the world? But it's great.
Yeah, I mean, of course, that is probably better known to Nintendo fans as Kirby's Avalanche. But, you know, that was always just sort of a weird game out there in the Sonic universe. Like, why does it turn Puyo Puyo
right.
into a Sonic Dr. Robotnik game? And then here it is, just tossed in the middle of Sonic Mania as a boss level. And, you know, in that context, knowing that it was part of, you know, the Sonic franchise, it makes perfect sense. Otherwise, it's just such an oddball thing, and that makes it really, really cool. So
yeah, it's like,
I'm really
it's
loving
a,
that.
It was like a brilliant way to pull that in there. It's so funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it almost makes it make more sense now than it did, you know, back in the Genesis days.
Yeah. Anyways, as we kind of been mentioning, I feel like it's definitely like a love letter to Sonic fans. And
oh yeah, absolutely.
It's so cool.
And it's not just a great Sonic game. I mean, it's also just a fantastic platformer on its own. It's just really well polished. Like I said, the levels are extraordinarily fun to play. And if you have never played a Sonic game, if you are a Mario diehard through and through, you know, don't get hung up on that.
Yeah.
Give it a try. Give it a spin, so to speak, because it is really, really excellent.
Yeah, you know, I was never a huge, huge Sonic fan.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I mean, you know, you're dyed-in-the-wool Nintendo Red, not Sonic Blue. So I was kind of surprised to hear that you were anxiously awaiting this game.
You know, it's one of those things where, you know, I definitely played a handful of Sonic games. I didn't, you know, ever spend a ton of time. I don't think I've ever actually beaten a Sonic game. But I always kind of liked them. And you know what? Playing this, it kind of reminded me why I've never really felt super connected to it, but also I've always had an appreciation for it. What it is Mario sort of encourages exploring.
Mm-hmm.
And Sonic does too to some extent, but you a lot of times feel sort of out of control as you're just flying through these levels.
Yes.
And I think that the closest experience that I can think about is basically like pinball. Because you don't really have full control over what you're doing. You're just kind of flying around. Now, the cool thing is, this game, you feel like you could play through it three times and the level might be different every time you play it.
Yes, absolutely.
Because, it's like there's all these little areas you can find, little
secrets.
There's
tons of routes.
Tons.
And that's one of the things I really liked about Sonic CD was it felt like, oh, you can take like sort of a top route or a middle route or a bottom route. They will all get you to the end. Taking sort of the main easiest path, the path of least resistance, you know, that'll get you there. But if you go off the beaten path, you'll get a lot more rings, you'll get more extra lives, you'll find more power-ups. And so it really is worth taking the time to discover some of this extra stuff, but it's not required.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't reward you with, like, you know, a secret exit or a new level or some crazy unlockable. But I kind of like that because it really leaves it up to the player. Do you want to, you know, go and see this other stuff, or do you want to just rush through as fast as possible?
Right.
And that, to me, is when Sonic is at its best.
Mm-hmm. So I have to ask you, which video mode have you been playing it in? CRT, soft, or...
I played the first several levels clear without any filter on, but then I switched it over to the soft filter for the last two worlds I played through.
And what'd you think?
Well, I mean, it's certainly very retro. It's certainly true to the source to use those CRT filters and add those scan lines. You know, will I keep it that way? I don't know. I kind of have come to appreciate pixel-perfect graphics on modern televisions of you know, classic-style games like that. So I'll probably switch it back, but it's a nice option to have in there.
Yeah, I kind of love it. It's kind of just like this kitschy little funny option. I also love how, like, the option menu, it's like, you go into, like, controls, and I don't think you can change the controls. It just shows you what they are.
It's actually not an option at all, but yes, it does just show you what they're doing.
Now, I do have one tiny gripe about the game, and it's really odd, and I want to know if you have experienced similar.
Okay, sure, fire away.
Have you noticed that when you hit, like, the menu or the off button on your Switch, it, like, takes an abnormal amount of time to power down?
I have not noticed that. In fact, I don't think I've actually tried that thing out. I mean, I've gone into sleep mode, and that seemed fine, but I haven't tried actually powering the system off while I had the game running or anything, no.
I've just been playing in handheld mode, and when I just hit the
when
I just hit the power off button, I mean, not hold it down, but just put it to sleep, or I just pull up the menu. At first, I thought, like, the menu was broken because I was hitting the button, and it just wouldn't come up. But what I realized was I was hitting it so many times that it would just, like, go on and off. But like, it's just kind of odd. It's like this, you know, fairly, you know, non-resource intensive game. Zelda, like, is very snappy when you go to the menu, where you'd think that would be the game that has like an issue going back and forth between the menu. But I don't know. Maybe it's just my system or something, but there's like a serious hang time.
You know, now that you mention it, actually, I do recall that happening. I was trying to go to the home menu for some reason, and I hit the button, and then it felt like I hadn't actually hit it because I was still able to, like, make selections on the main menu of Sonic Mania. And then, like, after, you know, 2 or 3 seconds, it went to the main Switch menu. So, yeah, I guess I was experiencing something like that. So, I guess it is a little odd.
Yeah.
Certainly doesn't detract from my enjoyment of the game, but it is kind of strange now that you mention it.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll fix it in a patch. And then the one other thing that I'll mention is that, you know, Snake Pass got a bunch of crap for using the different icon for the game. It's like instead of having the logo and like kind of looking like the box art, they ended up using just the snake image head. But Sonic kind of went the same approach. They didn't add like a Sonic Mania to the actual icon you're selecting. Just kind of an interesting design choice in the face of, you know, everybody kind of getting angry about Snake Pass switching icons.
Well, I was angry about Snake Pass for lots of other reasons, not the icon on the screen.
For spending money on it, you mean? Or?
For being so freaking hard to control and infuriating as a result.
All right. I actually haven't played it yet, but I do own it.
Speaking of which, what do you think of the difficulty of Sonic Mania so far?
I mean, so far it feels forgiving. I've only played maybe, I think I'm in the floating battery.
Oh, the flying battery.
Flying battery.
That would be the fourth zone. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and up to this point in the game, I've not had a lot of trouble. The last level I was in, I just beat that level. It gave me a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, I haven't had a game over yet myself, and I've been able to acquire plenty of extra lives, but the flying battery is where it started catching up to me. The final boss of that area is this giant spider, and he really gave me a run for my money. That spider is a big, stupid jerk.
Yeah, it got the best of me.
I don't like spiders in general, so please look forward to it.
It got the best of me, because you have to beat it in a different manner than the other bosses, and it threw me for a loop.
Yeah.
I ran out of time the first time I played.
Okay, so you have played through the flying battery then?
Yes, yes. That's as far as I've made it.
Okay. Yeah, I've played a few worlds past that, and so far that's been the toughest part of the game for me thus far.
Good to know, because it definitely was a little bit tough for me.
Now, did you pick up the digital version, or did you pick up the collector's edition?
Yeah, I picked up the digital version. I really wanted to get the collector's. Like, there's a lot of good stuff in it, but it also...
You think so, huh?
Well, the more I think about that stuff taking up space in my home, I was like, I can't do it.
You know, I ended up getting the collector's edition, which, you know, it doesn't include a physical copy of the game. It does just include a digital download code.
Right.
So it just gives you a bunch of physical stuff.
I love that you were waiting for Amazon to bring you a digital code.
Yeah, it sucked. That was not cool. So yeah, I could have either just gone on to the Switch and downloaded the thing for $20, or I'm waiting for Amazon to deliver this, you know, $60, $70 collector's edition to me that just includes a code. And I don't know, after getting the thing out and looking at it a bit, I'm not sure I made the right choice. Because what it includes is this little statue of Sonic on a Sega Genesis machine.
Yep.
And the Genesis is big. It's actually bigger than a real-life Sega Genesis.
What?
Yes, by about an inch or so.
In what world does that make sense?
Yeah. And it's a pretty darn large statue, and it looks pretty cool, but it feels really cheap. Like, you know, if I just look at this thing funny, it's going to fall apart or something. And, you know, I guess that's why it's only, you know, a $70 collector's edition and not like $150 or something like that. It's not like those first four figure statues or anything.
Right.
But it does feel cheap. You get what you pay for. Then it comes with a fake Sonic Mania Genesis cartridge with a gold ring inside it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what the point is of that. I mean, it's not something you can wear.
I mean, says you.
It's hard to display. You got to either have a really small wrist or really big fingers to make it fit. Maybe put on a necklace or something and wear it like Frodo.
Yeah, there you go. Throw it into Mount Doom.
And then it comes with a metal Sonic Mania card, kind of, you know, shaped like a trading card.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how am I going to display this stuff? What am I going to do with it? I don't know. The statue looks cool enough. I'll put it out there. But man, it sure does feel cheap. And it doesn't really have any of the stuff that I want out of a collector's edition. You know, I'd want an art book, a making of, a soundtrack, and of course, a physical game. So, in my opinion, the collector's edition is not worth the money, but the regular game, $20, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely going to be up there as one of my all-time favorite Sonic games, I would say.
Now, if it had Amiibo functionality, would that change everything?
Probably not. I mean, the game is already awesome, so... You know, it'd be hard to make me like it even more than I do now, mm-hmm. but yeah, sure, that'd make it even better. Why not?
I did see your funny Twitter picture with the cartridge stuck in your Genesis, so nicely done.
Yeah, don't shove it in there too hard or you'll probably break something, but you can put it in there a little bit, yeah.
Nice.
Any final thoughts on this before we change topics?
I just wish that the Genesis that came under the statue actually worked.
Well, I suppose that would be nice. It does make sounds, apparently, but I guess I need to install my batteries before that happens.
What? Okay, I need to see a video of that.
Yeah, it makes the classic Sega startup sound once you add some batteries to it.
It's what you've always wanted.
Regardless of that, Sonic Mania, awesome game, highly recommended, one of the best platformers on the system, or, you know, heck, maybe even one of the best platformers ever. Only time will tell.
Yeah, it's good.
And speaking of downloadable platformers, let's move along to another brand new release that's out on Nintendo 3DS. This game actually is just being released today in the Nintendo eShop. It is called Chicken Wiggle.
No, I had to ask you. You weren't responsible for naming this game at all, right?
Why would you even suggest that?
I don't know. I could just, for some reason, I feel like Chicken Wiggle would maybe be your favorite name of all time.
No, this game is from Atui, from one Jules Watson, the guy primarily responsible for Mutant Muds.
That's
and this
right.
is his latest project. It is a very cute, very methodical, but fairly hardcore platformer. And by hardcore, I mean you die in just one hit.
Wow.
Like any good platformer, it has lots of obstacles and things to interact with, like springboards, crumbling platforms, balloons that give you temporary flight, deadly spikes, hidden passages, and there is lots of stuff to collect. There are 100 gems in each stage, plus these hidden letter icons that spell F-U-N, fun. And it kind of makes it feel like the spiritual successor to Mutant Muds in, you know, some ways. I guess that's not surprising.
Well, that would make sense with it being sort of the same developer.
Yep, exactly. Unlike Mutant Muds, however, you don't really have any offensive weapons. You can peck at your enemies at like one pixel range. So this chicken, you know, really isn't built for fighting, but you can take out enemies that way. But the main exciting play mechanic in the game is you have a grappling hook.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's actually a worm. There's a worm that you're wearing in a backpack. So you're a chicken wearing a worm. You're not a chicken with a grappling hook. Neither one really makes a whole lot of sense. But it's a really fun play mechanic that makes level navigation really, really fun. So you don't swing on it back and forth like in Bionic Commando, but it is still slightly Bionic Commando-y and just, you know, this ability to grapple horizontally or vertically and move through the level like that is really, really neat.
Yeah, I dig the art style. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's got some great pixel art. Mm-hmm. It's got some really fun power-ups that add variety to the levels. You can get a double jump. You can get temporary flight. You can get the ability to smash through walls. And then you can get this ghost ability that lets you walk over obstacles and also take out these special ghost enemies that are otherwise invincible. Another thing to mention about the game is that there are not any bosses except for one at the very, very end. That boss fight is actually really fun, and after completing it, I was like, oh man, I wish they'd put more boss levels in the game, because this is really enjoyable. So, I don't know if I should just be happy if there was that one boss fight, or a little bit let down that there weren't more.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about that.
In addition to the main game, which I think is 8 worlds with 6 levels apiece, that's 48 levels, there is a fully functional level editor. As far as I can tell, it's got every single creation tool that the developers use to make the regular levels.
Oh, wow.
And you can do it all, except for, you know, the final boss fight. But you can, you know, choose your layout, completely design the layout from scratch, place the enemies, place the obstacles, put in power-ups, put in collectibles. And in fact, there's even more stuff that isn't in the main game.
Oh, wow.
Like there are teleporters that I don't think are in any of the main levels, and you can add different level objectives, like collecting all the gems or finding a key to open a door to unlock the exit. And the level editor is fairly intuitive, too. I didn't need a lot of instruction to figure things out. I guess it's kind of hard to know, you know, where to find some things, because certain parts are placed into various folders, and sometimes I'm like, well, which folder is this in? I have to check a folder or two before finding anything. But, you know, other than that, it was really, really simple to use, and it's really easy to upload your levels and share them online, which, of course, you cannot do in Super Mario Maker on 3DS. Mm. So if you know, you were kind of disappointed in that, here we have Chicken Wiggle to you know, fill that niche. You really like that name, don't you?
Chicken Wiggle to the rescue.
So yeah, that game is out now. It's $14.99. And you know, it's certainly no Sonic Mania, but I think it is very, very enjoyable if you like that kind of simple platformer with a little bit of a puzzle tilt.
Now, you're sure you had nothing to do with naming it?
I am pretty darn sure.
All right. I know, you probably would have named it Mr. T. Wiggle.
That's exactly right. Switching back to the Switch then, there is also a downloadable title on that platform I would like to discuss.
Oh, what do you got?
And that one is Retro City Rampage. Mm. We were talking about that on the show when it was announced a few weeks ago, and now it is out. It came out last week.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with this game at all? Have you played it on any other platforms or anything?
Oh, boy. I know I've played it for a minute on something, and I can't remember what it was, to be totally honest. I think I might have bought it on my Vita, which I know is crazy. But I didn't play it nearly enough. I liked the concept and the top-down view and the graphics and all that. Feels like an NES title that also didn't get released at some point.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the idea, is that it's an 8-bit homage to Grand Theft Auto.
Right.
And, you know, at one point, you know, as it was a work in progress, they were kind of calling it, you know, Retro Theftendo or something like that. And, you know, trying to, you know, combine those two universes, the 8-bit NES and the open world of GTA.
Right, which is kind of funny because GTA started in, like, the top-down view. You know?
Right, exactly. Original Grand Theft Auto and Grand Theft Auto 2, that's what they were like. So, you know, it does make a whole lot of sense when you think about that way. I mean, people who are only familiar with the current games might think it's really strange, but, you know, it actually does go back to that series' roots. And in addition to being a big GTA homage, it is also an homage to pretty much, you know, anything and everything out of the 80s and early 90s. I mean, it's just like back-to-back-to-back-to-back parodies of everything. It's just constant, you know. Back to the Future, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, right. Super Mario, Sonic the Hedgehog, Paperboy, Punch-Out, Thundercats, RoboCop, Metal Gear Solid, Mega Man 2, Duck Hunt, Batman, Rygar,
wow.
TMNT, The A-Team, Blades of Steel, Zelda, Pro Wrestling, blah, 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 Saved by the Bell. And also there are a disturbing number of Vanilla Ice references. Keep your eye out for those.
You can never have too many of those.
So, yeah, it's got lots of humorous stuff in there. You know, whether that's your cup of tea, you know, I guess it just depends on your sense of humor, but I was able to appreciate a lot of it. Then, in addition to all that, it's got a lot of variety as far as the missions go and the things you do in the game, just like a, you know, good Grand Theft Auto open world game.
Right.
You have your story missions, you have your optional side missions, you have these score-based challenges. Sometimes, you know, you can carjack a taxi, and then you can be like, okay, well, I'm going to play a little game of Crazy Taxi where I'm racing around the city to, you know, collect fares and get people to their destination as fast as possible. There are some missions where you need to collect items. There are stealth missions, pure combat missions. And there's even a level based on the NES TMNT bomb defusing stage. Only in this one, you're actually going underwater and planting the bombs. So
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So now it sounds like you like this game. Is that accurate?
I do. You know, it's a fun little game. And like I said, excellent sense of humor, does a lot of stuff really well. I mean, there's still probably, you know, a few rough edges here and there, but it has a really forgiving checkpoint system. So even if you, you know, fail at something and you don't really think it's your fault, it's not a big pain to go back and try again.
Right.
The graphics are also really solid. They're able to do a lot with, you know, these really, really small sprites. I mean, characters only have, you know, like 9 pixels for their face and stuff like that. But, you know, it does really well working within those limitations. And the music is really, really excellent as well.
Sweet. Now, I have a feeling you like this for another reason.
Well, I suppose you are alluding to the fact that you can play the game as me, as the Hoff.
I kind of want to buy it just to, like, drive you into the ocean or something.
I mean, I liked the game even before that, and that's, you know, how I ended up in there, is that, you know, as sort of a thank you for the coverage I gave this game back in Nintendo Power, the developer behind it, Brian Provinciano, you know, contacted me, said, hey, can I put your face in the game? There are lots of, you know, other gaming media's faces that are in the game. And so, yes, my face is in there. And so if you want to play as me, you go to the place called Faces R Us. You enter the coupon code POWER. And then you can, you know, choose to use my face. Mm. So, yes, if you've ever wanted to live life as a former Nintendo Power editor committing crimes, now you can.
Is there a volcano in the game? Because I would drive you into that.
Actually, there is a volcano later on, now that you mentioned it. There is. Huh. There is. Right. Yeah, this game has everything. Even volcanoes and even the kitchen sink. Yep, it's all there.
All right, well, I might pick this game up just to do stuff with you and take screenshots for Twitter.
Horrifying. Yeah, the game is $15, and I definitely think it's worth the price.
That's cool. Yeah, that's like a good option for the GTA-type crowd.
And, you know, even, you know, the non-GTA crowd, just because there's so much, you know, wacky stuff in there, it was a Nintendo fan just seeing all that stuff. It can be really appealing in, you know, just that way, too.
That's awesome.
But yes, it's definitely, I think, better if you're into the open-world GTA type of stuff.
Very cool.
And now, let's move along into some news.
Can you please do it in the old-timey newspaper boy voice?
And this week in the news, the digital revolution continues. In case Sonic Mania, Retro City Rampage, and Chicken Go weren't enough, the months ahead will bring even more exciting new titles to a Nintendo eShop near you.
You know who you sound like if you watch Korra? You sound like the announcer at the beginning of those episodes.
Oh, they've got, that's an old-timey radio voice, too. Yep. So I will take that as a compliment. Thank you very much.
You should.
So, yeah, a whole bunch of new and exciting downloadable games have been announced for Nintendo systems.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the most exciting is that we are getting a 3DS version of Apollo Justice Ace Attorney coming out this November in the eShop.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
That, of course, is the fourth installment of the Ace Attorney game. Phoenix Wright is sort of retired. It stars a new character named Apollo Justice. And, you know, I'm not going to get too much into the intricacies of it yet, but it is another excellent game in that series. I mean, admittedly, it's probably my least favorite game of the mainline series. But still, I mean, I like all of them. And it's pretty cool that now all six of the mainline games are going to be available on 3DS.
Yeah, that is cool.
Also, I feel like this game works a lot better after you've played Ace Attorney 5 and 6, because in Ace Attorney 5 and 6, Apollo Justice, he sort of ends up being really cool, but in the fourth game, when he was actually introduced, he was sort of lame. So it's kind of nice to see him cool first and then go back and play this game and be like, oh, well, this is where he came from. Wow, he was kind of pathetic back then. But yeah, for me, it's just going to be nice to be able to play that game. I haven't played that game since it first came out on the DS. And I was kind of like, boy, I'd love to replay this game again. And I was starting to play it on iOS. But now that I know the 3DS version is coming out, I will totally be getting that a few months down the road.
Sweet.
In addition to that, we have found out that Thimbleweed Park is coming out on Switch in September. That is a classic point-and-click style mystery adventure game, you know, cut from, you know, the same kind of cloth as, like, old LucasArts adventures, and that seems pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Then Mutant Muds, you know, from the same folks that brought us Chicken Wiggle, that's going to be coming to Switch. Along with Super Meat Boy, the super difficult, challenging platformer that previously came to Nintendo systems on the Wii U. So out of these games, out of Super Meat Boy, Mutant Muds, and Thimbleweed Park, which of those are you most looking forward to on Switch?
I gotta say, Thimbleweed Park probably, and partially because I'm a huge fan of point-and-click adventures. I have this weird, like, nostalgia. Like, when I start playing a game like that, I have to beat it.
Huh. I didn't know you were into those. That surprises me.
Yeah, I think what it was my great uncle had one of the first personal computers, and he had King's Quest, and I played that.
Oh, that's a great game.
I played that around the time that I played, I think, the very first Super Mario Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, well, Mario can, you know, run and jump, but like in King's Quest, I can like climb a tree and find eggs and like, mm-hmm. you know, there's just like this crazy amount of things you could do. And as a kid, it felt almost limitless. And so ever since then, I've been like very drawn to point and click adventures. So Thimbleweed Park is probably the most, the thing I'm looking most forward to. If I hadn't played Super Meat Boy, I might say that, but I've also played Super Meat Boy and I love the game. But I also like, once you get to a certain point in that game, you're sort of just like,
You're screwed. Yeah. It's just too hard.
Like you basically can't beat it. I mean, maybe you can, but like I can't.
If there was a game where you're going to pick up your Switch and throw it across the room, that's probably the one.
Right. Hopefully you've just got it in Joy-Con mode so you can just replace your controllers after you throw them.
Yes.
But yeah. So Super Meat Boy is a great addition to the Switch lineup. But
yeah, Mutant Muds is too.
Yeah, it is. It is as well. And you know, maybe we'll get some Chicken Wiggle Love on there eventually too. But Thimbleweed Park is probably the one I'm going to pick up first.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of a rigged question since that's the one that has not been on Nintendo systems before. But yeah, like you said, you know, it's always great to be able to play and enjoy a classic style adventure game like this. And it's, you know, it's coming from some great developers. So I am also really looking forward to that game as well.
Sweet.
And then in addition to new games, we have also got a new piece of hardware to discuss. Nintendo announced shortly after we recorded our last episode, there's going to be a new Metroid-themed new Nintendo 3DS XL featuring Samus Aran.
I really want to make the Metroid sound when you acquire something, but I wouldn't do it justice.
Do, 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 do.
Exactly. Wow, that was pretty good. Pretty good.
So yeah, it's going to be a pretty nifty looking system. It's two-toned. It's red and yellow, just like mm-hmm. Samus's outfit. It's got a very striking horizontal Samus, you know, aiming your gun on the red front. And then the back is yellow with a Metroid symbol on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be cheap, though. It's going to be $200. So just your standard new Nintendo 3DS price. And it's going to be out on September 15th. Along with the new Metroid game, Metroid Samus Returns.
Yeah, it's pretty dang cool. I gotta be honest.
It's really nice.
Yeah, it really makes me want to buy one, but I can't do it.
Yeah, I would love to get one, but I've already got a new 3DS XL. I've already got a new 3DS non-XL. I can't bring myself to buy another system, but man, I would really love to because it's really, really cool.
Well, you could always sell some amiibo.
Oh, well, that's not going to happen. I'm looking to get more amiibo on that date. That's when the new Samus and the Metroid amiibo come out. I'm not looking to get fewer.
Now, so. If I wanted to buy those, how would you recommend that I go about obtaining the Metroid release amiibos?
Well, the last time I checked, they seem to be pretty much sold out everywhere online. So your best bet would probably be just to pick them up on a store on launch day or wait for them to show up on Amazon. Amazon usually puts up the new amiibo on the day they come out. On the other hand, if you're interested in picking up one of these Samus 3DS systems, those are still available on GameStop.com and possibly other places as we're recording this. If you are interested, I would certainly look for those pre-orders because I'll bet it's not going to hang around long.
Mm-hmm.
One other bit of news I wanted to discuss this week is the Nintendo World Championships 2017. That's right, Nintendo has announced that its competitive gaming tournament is back.
Sweet.
Yeah, the qualifiers are going to be held at 8 specific Best Buy locations around the United States starting soon on August 19th. So if you're interested in that, I suppose you better get ready and start practicing your Mario Kart 7 on 3DS.
Mm.
They've got two age categories. They've got 12 and under, and they've got 13 and up. And each group is going to have to compete for best time trial times in Mario Kart 7.
Mm.
Whoever gets the best times at each store, I guess that's how that determines if you're qualified for the Nintendo World Championships, which are going to be held in New York City on October 7th. So that is a pretty cool opportunity.
Yeah, and I've heard Fred Savage is going to be there. Is that right?
I have not heard this. I think that is a blatant lie.
Says you.
But that would be pretty cool.
I mean, you never know. He's in a new show on Netflix. Have you seen this?
No, I have not seen this.
Yeah.
But I do recall him expressing interest in attending the Nintendo World Championships the last time they were held in 2015. So you never know. Now, what would you like to see at the actual Nintendo World Championships that are going to be held on October 7th? What other games do you think people should compete in? I mean, I kind of feel like ARMS would be an obvious one.
Yeah.
And Splatoon 2 would be an obvious one.
Yep.
But what about beyond that?
Oh, beyond that? Beyond like a multiplayer title? Or are you thinking multiplayer?
Up to you. Totally up to you.
I would almost like to see something out of Breath of the Wild, where you just have to,
oh, yeah,
you just have to like complete something faster than anyone else.
Yeah, or they could just put you into those new master trials and, you know, try to make you get through that. Or, you know, maybe Eventide Island, maybe that would be the thing to do. But throwing you to an area where you don't have any gear and being forced to complete that so you can do it first and best would be pretty cool.
Yep.
But for me, I think the thing I would love to see, mm-hmm, it's a game that no one has really had a chance to play before. You were kind of alluding to this, you know, when you made your Fred Savage joke, but it would be really cool to sort of take a page out of The Wizard and be like the finals, you know, would be playing a new previously unseen level in Super Mario Odyssey. Mm. And so it's like, oh, that's something they never really had a chance to practice or play before. So let's, you know, really put their skills to the test and see who is best playing this title that they, you know, haven't really had a chance to fool around with previously.
I like that.
I think something like that would be really cool.
Yeah. Now, would you have to play it with a power glove?
Hopefully not. But if they do make a power glove that's compatible with the Switch, I'm totally down with that.
Yeah, I know you would be. Oh, speaking of, have you seen there's like this, I don't think it was a Kickstarter, but it was one of those crowdfunded type things where someone made a, basically a drink holder that you plug your Joy-Cons into on either side.
Oh.
And,
yeah, I did see a picture of that. I wasn't aware that was a Kickstarter or that type of project, but, yeah, I did see a picture. Very interesting.
I might be totally off on that, but I thought that's what it was. And I was like, you know what? I wonder what else you could attach a Joy-Con to that would be kind of fun.
Well, I know it does seem like there are endless possibilities. So if that's you know, really what's happening, it is kind of cool to see people, you know, coming up with crazy stuff like that.
Yeah, it really is.
All right, that does it for the news this week. Before we move along to our big topic, we have one piece of listener mail that I would like to address.
Is it about One Piece?
No, sorry. This one comes from a listener, Shu, and it is about the redesigned systems that we talked about on the last episode of the podcast. He writes, "Hey, I enjoyed the segment about best and worst hardware revisions, and I had a few comments. First, the original Game Boy had amazing battery life. You could take dead batteries out of Game Gears and get more hours out of the Game Boy. The Pocket had worse battery life, understandable using only two AAAs, but the screen was super clear in comparison, no more green tint. The GBA with the brighter screen you mentioned was actually a backlit screen, unlike the previous frontlit screen with a blue tint. The backlit version only came in a metallic blue and pink in the US, as far as I know, so they didn't have that screen on the NES GBA SP, although it is the best looking piece of hardware Nintendo has ever put out. And Hoff, how do you not like the Game Boy Micro? It pioneered changeable faceplates, though I'll admit it sucks for any game requiring a lot of the L and R button usage." So, Pete, a lot of that was addressed to you about the Game Boy Pocket. Now, one thing I did say when we were having that discussion was the screen was a little bit soupy, and by that I did not mean it was green. I meant that there was still some blurring going on. However, it is night and day. Like he says, it was, you know, it's vastly superior. That was one of the reasons why we picked it as a great piece of hardware. But as for the battery life, Pete, what do you have to say about that?
I actually think Shu is spot on. I do think the original had a fairly decent battery life, but the requirement of putting in four, I think it was AAA batteries at the time.
It was four AA batteries.
Four AA. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, very hefty.
Yeah, so that's like a lot. Even if it lasts 8 hours or whatever, it definitely is. That's a lot of batteries to have to throw in the trash every time you use it.
Yeah, I mean, I checked into this a little bit, and apparently officially, Nintendo claims it would last up to 30 hours.
Wow.
But I never remember it lasting more than 9 or maybe 10 hours with the original Game Boy Fat.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly had better battery life than the Game Gear. I know that for a fact.
Yes, both of them did.
The Game Gear, true. Like, just died pretty much the minute you put batteries in. But no, that's funny. I hadn't heard that you could actually take out Game Gear batteries and put them in your Game Boy and they'd still work.
But yeah, I mean, I agree with what you were originally saying on the previous show, where just having this piece of hardware that doesn't require 4 AA's and is not, ginormous due to that fact is a big step forward.
Yeah. And as he mentions, screen resolution was very good. It's a lot less, Mountain Dew colored and way more black and white.
Yeah. I mean, it was, a huge, huge, huge improvement.
Yeah. I also like people with good taste when they talk about the micro, so...
Well, I will address that one. I think I already talked about it on the show, but how did I not like it? The screen's just, too darn tiny.
Yeah.
And as far as, pioneering changeable faceplates, well, it didn't really follow through on that promise. So, I can't really say that was, a great feature of the system. It could have been, but it wasn't. So I am still going to stand by what I was saying earlier. It is certainly not one of my favorites. Mm. But he does point out the L and R buttons were problematic as well.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's another reason to not like it. So. Thank you for that tip, Shu.
I'm going to start talking about reasons not to like you.
Well, you always do, so that's nothing new.
You got me there.
This seems like a good place to take an intermission, so let's do that. And then when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, which is Nintendo Holy Grail games. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is Nintendo's Holy Grail games. And by that, I mean games that it sort of seems like are just out of reach, games that a lot of Nintendo fans really, really want, but for one reason or another, they just don't seem obtainable. However, the flip side to that is that Nintendo's actually been making a lot of gamers' wishes come true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... for a while, it didn't seem like we were ever going to be getting a new Metroid, and boom, Nintendo suddenly announces not only are we getting Metroid Samus Returns, but we're getting Metroid Prime 4 coming to Switch.
Yep.
We had totally forgotten about Star Fox 2, and then, boom, out of nowhere, we were actually going to be getting Star Fox 2 some 20 years after it was canceled, coming out on the Super NES Classic, should we be able to actually get our hands on one.
And even on top of that, like Earthbound finally being released after all these years.
Earthbound not only coming to Virtual Console after so many demands, but then also the fact that we got Earthbound Zero, a game that was canceled on the NES. So Nintendo has been actually making a pretty good habit of making the impossible possible and sort of making these wishes come true.
Yeah.
And that's pretty darn cool.
It's almost like a Christmas miracle.
Kind of, yes. So we kind of thought, well, let's think about what other Holy Grail games that Nintendo might actually, perhaps realistically, be able to bring us.
Yeah, let's do it.
And I think the first game, the game that would probably come to mind for most people, the obvious one, would be another Earthbound title, would be Mother 3.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a game that people still really, really want. We got Earthbound in alternate forms. We got Earthbound Zero, but still, Mother 3 continues to elude us. And, of course, there are fan translations out there, but Pete... I've never played the fan translation. I don't want to play it in any way except for an official Nintendo release. How about you?
I never have either. I had a good friend who did play it. and he really, really enjoyed it. But he also
I've heard absolutely nothing but great things about it, of course.
Yeah, but he also told me there was a couple parts in the game, one in particular that kind of would probably get axed if it came over here. Have you heard anything about that?
Not really. I have tried to stay pretty much spoiler-free about this game because, you know, I continue to hold out hope that eventually, one day, Nintendo will make an official North American release out of this thing. But until that happens, you know, I know that Lucas is the main character. I know we see the return of Pokey, a.k.a. Porky. And I've heard that it is an extremely emotional experience. But, you know, beyond that, I've tried to stay away from the specifics.
Yeah. Do you want me to spoil it for you? It really has nothing to do with the overall plot, but if you really don't want to hear this, please tune out.
No, no, for the sake of the podcast, go ahead.
For the sake of the podcast. So, essentially, there's this part where you're underwater, and there's these mermen, apparently. Mm-hmm. And instead of being able to breathe underwater, you literally have to travel between the mermen, and they blow air into your mouth.
Okay, that doesn't sound too horrible.
No, and it's not, but it, but
I thought you were going to have to get the air from another orifice or something like that.
wow. No, but you can imagine that Nintendo's reluctancy to do something like that. I could see that being a thing. That's just you know, a guess that that part would potentially be revised with either mermaids or removed completely, but you know,
I'm sure they could figure something out.
I think that that kind of stuff in general in Japan is a tad bit more acceptable, I guess, for lack of a better way of saying that.
Well, it sounds pretty tame to me, but regardless of that, I do think that Nintendo will find a way to bring that game to North America eventually. I mean, they've got to know there's demand. You know, they know there's a market for it. We've been introduced to the character. People keep clamoring for it. And I've just got to believe that this is going to happen sooner or later.
Yeah, you'd think so. I mean, with everything else that they've done with all these, you know, moving mountains and somehow making these miracle games happen, you got to think this is one that would be relatively easy for them to release if they needed to.
Yeah, I mean, back when I was at Nintendo, and, you know, so I guess for part of the time that when you were there, mm-hmm. I felt like there was kind of, you know, a negative feeling surrounding the Earthbound franchise, because, mm-hmm. you know, it was not obviously a huge success on Super NES.
Right.
But, you know, that was a long time ago. That's been like 10 years, and I think the attitudes have drastically changed. You know, that was before we were getting on Virtual Console. That was before we got extra Smash characters. So I think that, you know, the attitudes have adjusted enough that it will finally happen.
Yeah, I think back in the day, Nintendo took a huge gamble on it, and it just didn't pay off. I think that there was still a little bit of sour grapes over that.
Yeah, I agree.
But, I mean, obviously, it's done nothing but well on Virtual Console, as you mentioned. So you could imagine this one making sense at some point.
Yeah, I think it's got a good chance.
Cool.
Moving on to the next Holy Grail game. You know, unlike Mother 3, this isn't a game that already exists and we're just waiting for them to localize it. But I think it is a game that a lot of people would like to see make a return. And that is Advance Wars. It's been a long time since we've had a new Advance Wars game. And I think it is high time that the folks at Nintendo and Intelligent Systems return to this property.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when you think about it. Now we're just like sort of inundated with Fire Emblem.
Yes.
And Advance Wars was really the first title in the North American market to break into that genre for Nintendo. They didn't lead with Fire Emblem. They led with Advance Wars. And
huh, I didn't really remember that.
Yeah, and it's just kind of interesting that they have kind of turned their back on it.
Yeah, and I think we're kind of in a situation now where we're in danger of having too much Fire Emblem. Yeah. I mean, it's almost turning into like an annual series now.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year we got, you know, the remake on 3DS, mm-hmm. and then we're supposedly still getting Fire Emblem Warriors coming out
right.
on Switch and 3DS.
It's on my phone.
We got this new one coming. Yeah, it's on our phone as well. Yeah, you're totally right. It's everywhere. And it almost seems like they're pulling an Activision where it's just going to be like, you know, annual franchise, and they're just going to beat it to death until people are totally sick of it.
Right.
And a really easy way to avoid that is to break it up with some Advance Wars releases. Like, you know, instead of doing Fire Emblem constantly, you know, mix it up. Give us a similar type of game that people will enjoy in a similar way, but, you know, provide us completely different types of environments, completely different types of characters, you know, new tweaks to the gameplay. I think they've got a great opportunity to come in and make another successful, you know, strategy franchise out of this. I mean, not that it wasn't, you know, somewhat successful before, but it was, you know, very, very niche. And I think they could make it go more mainstream now, absolutely.
Now, do you remember the game that came out last in that series? And I know it's a little bit of a stretch, but it wasn't, well, it wasn't the same title, but it was kind of.
Well, you mean Battalion Wars 2?
Yes. Kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I almost forgot there even was a Battalion Wars 2. That was on Wii. The first Battalion Wars was on GameCube, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
But even after that, we got Advance Wars Days of Ruin on the Nintendo DS. I believe that was the last title in the series to come out.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's been a while. I mean, 2008 was the last one.
Yeah, 9 years ago.
So I'm almost wondering, like, how many of our listeners probably even have played Advance Wars, which is kind of crazy to me.
I think they did release some of the games on Wii U Virtual Console.
That's so right.
If you haven't played it in its original form, there's always that way.
But you're right, Chris. The first one and the second one especially were kind of like, I don't know, they were, in my mind, they were almost like cutting edge for Nintendo at the time. Mm-hmm. They just were a totally different genre that Nintendo really hadn't explored in North America. And I tested the first one and I loved it.
Oh, wow.
And I just thought, you know, what a cool game. Of course, now it's been sort of replaced with Fire Emblem, but I'd love to see it make a return.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, having it on Virtual Console is great and all, but I think nothing would be better than seeing it make an actual return in a brand new game on Switch. That would be fantastic.
And the latest one was good. I just remember it being sort of a little bit more like gritty.
Yeah.
And it kind of lost like some of the fun like anime characters from the first one.
Yeah, I don't think I played that one very much, but I do remember it being distinctly less charming than its predecessors. But yeah, if they made a new one, I think they'd have a great opportunity to sort of you know, reboot it, bring back that charm, bring back what everybody liked about it. And as I said, make another standalone strategy franchise. It's a big hit.
Yep.
So let's move on to our next title on the list. This is one that you brought up specifically. You were saying it is high time that Nintendo goes back to the F-Zero franchise.
I mean, it really is. F-Zero has been one of my favorite franchises, as far as racing games at least, that Nintendo's brought along. You know, there's always Mario Kart, and Mario Kart kind of is the lead dog, whereas F-Zero is sort of the black horse. But they're always really fun games, and they always have these cool mechanics where, you know, maybe there's like a spin attack, like from the N64 version, F-Zero X. And then the GameCube version. That also, did you ever play that game?
I did. I lost a lot. That game was super, super hard. And that's probably why it was the last one we got on console, because people were so infuriated by it.
They are definitely a high skill level, but it also is just, I don't know, part of it is like a graphic showcase. They're usually really, it's almost like Nintendo's Wipeout in a way.
Well, I mean, it certainly is in a lot of the ways. I mean, that's what it is a, you know, futuristic, you know, aggressive racing game, and it certainly does fill that niche. It's not the same niche as Mario Kart, and I totally think that there is room for a second racing franchise.
I was reading this thing the other day about how, I don't know if you beat any of the single-player missions, like if you played through, and I forgot what you did to have to unlock these, but...
In which game?
In the GameCube F-Zero, F-Zero GX, I believe it was called.
I beat, like, you know, the first four or something, and after that, it's like, forget this.
Now,
I'm just going to go back and play the N64 or Super NES games.
I don't know if you saw these, but, like, I forget what you had to do to unlock them, but you basically got these, like, CG cutscenes of all the different characters. And I was reading this article that apparently those cost a lot of money to make. And, I remember playing through it thinking, who made these? Like, I can't imagine Nintendo making these. They were, like, highly detailed. You know, I say that now, but if I went and watched, like, YouTube, they're probably very garbage. But they were really cool at the time. It was these, like, little funny, you know, skits with, like, almost every character from that franchise. And that is really bizarre because it's, like, you know, they've not done anything else with those characters, really. I think there was an anime for...
There was.
Yeah. But the way they were treating these characters. It was almost like they had these big dreams for them or something. But anyway, I don't think the game probably sold enough to warrant that. But, you know, so again, maybe there's some little bit of reluctancy to make a sequel.
Well, certainly enough time has passed. I think they should be willing to try to give it another shot. And, you know, we just got a new Mario Kart on Switch. It's probably going to be a while before we're ready for Mario Kart 9. So in the meantime, I think that would be a great opportunity to bring back F-Zero and reintroduce us to Captain Falcon and all these other characters and just give us a different type of racing game. You know, nothing like F-Zero GX. Like I said, that game was... I did not enjoy how brutally difficult that game was. I mean, you couldn't make like a single mistake and expect to beat a race. That was infuriating. But take it back to the level of fun that you had from F-Zero X on N64 and that crazy track design and, you know, that rocking soundtrack and just bring all that stuff back. I mean, to me, that's what F-Zero is about. Not, you know, high production quality cutscenes or anything.
Right.
But just give us more of this awesome futuristic racing and, you know, I think it'll sell itself.
Yeah, and another thing to keep in mind is that Nintendo really hasn't had a high-powered online console. The Wii U was pretty good, but the Switch is much better. And I think that alone would make F-Zero a worthy franchise to kind of bring into the fold, because the online abilities, I mean, there was, you know, there were,
yeah, for sure,
there were like 30 player races in F-Zero X, which I doubt they would probably do on Switch. But even like an 8-player racing game with drones or something would be great.
Well, I mean, they're able to do a lot of players going simultaneously at it in Mario Kart. So, yeah, I imagine they could do some pretty cool online stuff if they brought F-Zero back on Switch.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'll get red on it.
All right. Okay, so the next game that I've got on this list of Holy Grail games, I admit this is one that probably is more of a niche audience, but this is one that personally really appeals to me. And that game is Terranigma.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are probably saying, well, what on earth is Terranigma?
Can I be included in that group?
I thought you might be. This is the sequel to Soul Blazer and Illusion of Gaia. So it is a 16-bit action RPG that was released on the Super Famicom.
Hmm.
However, it was also released on the Super Nintendo over in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So it was completely localized into English, and so there's really no reason this game couldn't be brought out over here.
Hmm.
You know, all it takes is for them to, you know, get the, you know, rights from Enix or Square Enix now, because Enix was the original publisher over in Japan, and then bring the sucker out on Virtual Console. But let me tell you, I absolutely loved Soul Blazer and I loved Illusion of Gaia, and I was super excited that there was going to be a third game in that series. But, you know, unfortunately, it never came out in a form that I was able to play back in the day. I did pick up the Japanese cartridge a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it's in Japanese. I only played it for like an hour or something, and it was pretty fun, but I would really love the opportunity to be able to play in English and understand what the heck I'm doing.
So I got to ask, why don't you just buy the PAL version?
I'm not sure if I can actually play that on a North American Super Nintendo. And aside from that, it's probably cost prohibitive. It is a very, you know, in-demand game on the secondary market just because it is something that was, you know, a really cool-looking game in a critically acclaimed series. And, you know, it wasn't something that you were able to get over here. So it is something that a lot of collectors have acquired. And because of that, the price has gone up fairly considerably, I would suggest.
Yeah, it looks cool from the screenshots.
It's not a big name like the other stuff we've been talking about, but I think it would be a really cool game to be able to get in some capacity over here.
Yeah, totally.
On to the next title. I would say that a game that players have wanted, that players have more or less demanded for nearly 20 years, I think it's actually finally going to come true. And this is the full Pokemon experience on console.
Yes.
There have been console Pokemon games before. There have been console Pokemon RPGs before.
Right.
But they aren't the full-fledged, you know, mainline Pokemon, gotta catch them all sort of thing.
Right.
Usually there's little side stories or whatever.
Right.
But now, with Switch, You know, we've got the Pokemon Company bringing us a real new mainline Pokemon game. The next game in the series is going to be on Switch.
Yeah, seriously, pinch me.
So as long as they actually go, you know, all out in their production values and make it look like a console title, take advantage of the HD graphics of the system and all that jazz, then, you know, this is a game that we're finally going to get.
Yeah, that, it's pretty crazy when you think about it, that after all this time, they've never done a console version of, like, the mainline Pokemon. But it's exciting. I'm curious to see what they do with it. I mean, coming out of Pokemon Sun and Moon, I'm excited. Like, Sun and Moon had me completely rejuvenated on that franchise.
Yeah, totally. Me too.
Yeah, so I can't wait to see what they do with it.
Yeah, it should be really, really cool. And, you know, we'll be seeing it probably before too long. I think the game is probably supposed to be out next year. So let's just cross our fingers. And it really is this full-fledged console experience that we're all hoping for.
Yeah, I can't imagine being able to, like, have high-quality graphics, high-res graphics in a Pokemon game, to be honest. A Pokemon mainline title.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty crazy. However, to go along with this mainline Pokemon game on console we've all been craving, another Pokemon game that I feel like people have been waiting for ages is a sequel to Pokemon Snap. And really, I feel like Nintendo has kind of missed the boat on this because it would have been the perfect game to have been on Wii U.
It would have.
Yeah, that second screen on your controller and using that as your camera while the main action's going on the TV screen, it just would have made so much freaking sense.
You're right. Pokemon Snap was a fun game, I thought.
It was. It was a really fun Pokemon game. And at the time it came out, I would say I liked it more than the mainline Pokemon games on the Game Boy. So at that time, I would probably have said it was my favorite Pokemon game.
Blasphemy. Now, a funny story about Pokemon Snap is that it was in the testing department for a long time.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm not entirely sure why that was, but it also, like, got localized, so we tested all the different versions of it. But the funny thing about that game was that it essentially played itself. Like, you hit a button and then you would just move through the level. which is kind of funny because most games don't work like that. It's like kind of an on-rail shooter, even though you're not shooting.
Yes. Well, you're shooting pictures. So.
But then the other unfortunate thing about that game was that you could actually beat it in 4 hours or something like that if you were really good. And so any game you can beat that quickly is sometimes a burden. So it was just this kind of like, it was kind of this dreaded title that came through. That being said, it was a very fun game, and I remember playing it before I worked at Nintendo and being pretty enthralled with it. It's just so much fun to see the Pokemon come to life in their little environments and stuff.
Yep, for sure.
And now with, like, the graphic capabilities of the Switch, how cool would it be to see, like, you know, some of those things come to life?
Yeah, with gyroscopic controls.
Yeah.
It really makes a whole lot of sense on current systems. Like, it would still work on 3DS. It would still work great on Switch.
Yep.
I still think that Wii U would have been the perfect console for it.
Yeah.
But still, having it on either of their other current pieces of hardware would be great. Just maybe they should make it so you have to, you know, beat it in more than 4 hours, I suppose.
Yes.
Probably a good plan.
Yeah.
So, anything else you'd like to add to this list of Holy Grail games?
Well, Chris, they did show off Zelda Maker a little bit. They made something for Breath of
the Wild. Oh, yes, the prototype for Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, exactly.
And there has been quite a stir about it. A lot of people were thinking, oh, well, you know, this should be a real product. They should actually release this.
Yeah, the fact that Mario Maker is out there and it's a thing now. And it's been out for both Wii U and 3DS.
Yes.
You would think that it would make almost perfect sense to do a Zelda Maker. Of course, it would be a little trickier. I don't know how it would work exactly. Like, do you make the entire world? Do you make a level? Do you make, you know, when I say a level, I mean a dungeon.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot more extensive. It could be a lot more work than something as simple as Super Mario Maker. But you are totally right. There is a lot of clamor for a game like this. There's definitely an audience for it. And I think it could definitely be really, really cool if they made something like this.
In my mind, it would be based off of Zelda 1, and that's kind of the example they've shown as well.
Yes.
Because it's just way more easy to do, like, the building blocks, and there's a set amount of items, there's a set amount of tiles.
I mean, yeah, you certainly wouldn't want to be doing this in 3D. You would certainly have to stick with 2D, just like Mario Maker did.
Yeah, and then there might, I mean, I'm curious if they would add in elements of Zelda 2, or elements of Link's Awakening, or elements of A Link to the Past.
Zelda 2 is so different, I think that would be pretty much impossible to do. But I think including a tile set from Link to the Past and from Link's Awakening, or you know, just the Game Boy games in general, would make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, it would be kind of funny if there were a couple nods to Zelda 2, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, I don't know if this one is quite in, like, you know, Holy Grail territory yet. It's only been, you know, like less than a year, this whole Zelda Maker concept idea prototype was unveiled. So, you know, people don't maybe have the yearning for it that they do for something like Mother 3 or New Advance Wars or F-Zero, but I certainly admit it would be really, really cool. I think there could be great things from that if they chose to pursue that.
Yeah, and I would actually hope that it would be a bit more seamless with the being able to sort of download your other maps and basically go online and check out all the stuff that's available.
Yeah, that's certainly something that could be improved or what's in Mario Maker. But you know, it's funny that you bring up Zelda because I do have another sort of Holy Grail title in that series. And no, I'm not talking about the CDI games making a comeback.
Well, excuse me, Princess.
I'm talking about the very obscure BS Zelda games. And that doesn't mean what you think it means. That stands for Broadcast Satellite Zelda. Oh. And these games are so obscure that probably a lot of people don't even know they exist. But this is something that came out on the Super Famicom over in Japan. They were available for download and could only be played at very specific times because they had like radio voiceover that was synced to the gameplay. And so at certain points in the game, you would have these events. And so obviously, if they were to somehow re-release these games, they wouldn't be having, you know, synced radio voiceovers, because now you can just have regular voiceovers in your game. It's a common occurrence. And they could, you know, re-release the games in that manner. But they released three games in the series, the first two being basically based on the original Legend of Zelda. Mm-hmm. Although they were upgraded to 16-bit graphics. It was like an enhanced version of Zelda 1, but you weren't even playing as Link. You were playing as just some other, like, sort of random generic character. And then the third one was based on the visual style from Link to the Past. But again, you're playing as some weird random character who's not Link. Still, it's like this very bizarre, mysterious sort of secret and hidden part of the Legend of Zelda franchise that no one hardly ever even thinks about, just because these games were so limited, so rare, so obscure, and you know, there's really no way at all to play them anymore.
Right.
So I mean, that's about as you know, Holy Grail-ish as it gets. It's like something that, you know, there's barely even any evidence that existed. I would love to find a way for that to come back. And all the players that missed out on it, both in Japan and across the world, would be able to try out these lost, missing Zelda games.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, I think this almost brings this topic to a close. Pete, anything else you want to throw out there before we wrap it up?
I got one more that I'd be remiss if I didn't say, but where is Super Mario 64, and why have we not seen an HD remake? And there, you know, there was always a Super Mario 64 2 as well, that there could be, you know, an extra level or something. That game just deserves HD remake the same way like Wind Waker was tackled.
Yeah, I suppose you're not wrong about that. You know, maybe give us an enhanced camera or something like that. You know, I'm not sure if it's really a Holy Grail type of game, but I do think it would be a great thing for us to have. My, you know, crazy random wish title, I'm going to go for a third-party game that, you know, we are pretty much never going to see. You know, of the stuff we've talked about, I think Mother 3, I think, has a good chance.
Yep.
You know, I wouldn't rule out, you know, ever getting another Advance Wars or F-Zero. We're, you know, definitely getting a new Pokemon that will be on console. Terranigma, probably not. But this next one, I would say the chances of it ever happening are extraordinarily slim, but this is another one that's a true Holy Grail for gamers. Chrono Trigger 2.
Ooh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know why, you know, they can't make a proper sequel to that over at Square Enix. I mean, they did make Chrono Cross, which was, you know, in the same series, but totally nothing like the original, you know, just different in tone and appearance and gameplay. So I would like them to somehow figure out whatever hurdle they've got there, overcome it, and make a true sequel to that game. Probably never going to happen, but yeah, that would definitely be up there on my list of Holy Grail games if we're going to go beyond Nintendo.
Yeah, that game almost makes too much sense for it to ever get made.
Yeah. But with that, I think that brings this topic to a close. Of course, if any of our listeners out there want to share some of their Holy Grail games, we would love to hear from you. I suppose this means we should wrap up this week's episode, but you know, before we go, I do believe there's time for one more thing. You know what that is?
What is that, Chris?
That would be a dramatic reading. Once again, continuing the adventures of Captain Nintendo from the pages of Nintendo Power Magazine.
Chris, I've been waiting the last 2 weeks patiently to hear the end of this.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you've been waiting on the edge of your seat with bated breath, because last time we had Nintendo employee Tara Bates placing her piping hot cup of coffee too close to a box of special microchips, causing them to violently glow.
Mm-hmm.
Her colleague and possible stalker Brett Randles paused his Metroid game and attempted to stop the microchips from causing any harm. And so now the saga continues. Just as he reached the object, it exploded violently, driving him backward and into his control deck, NES Advantage, and the monitor as the enchanted microchips sprayed forth like tiny darts. Most of them embedded themselves deep into Brett's skin. Others fused with the microchips in the Metroid cartridge and the monitor. Tara reached Brett first and knelt down to feel his pulse, but he was almost too hot to touch. And then she noticed something else. His skin had a soft, metallic feel to it. Brett! Brett! Are you all right? There was no answer. Max, what should we do? Tara was obviously worried. I'll call 911, said Max, and he started toward the phone. Come on, Mom. Let me sleep just another half hour. It was Brett. He was coming too, but holding his head. I feel strange. The light! Are you hurt? Tara asked. No, I think I'm okay, managed Brett, trying to get his bearing, but feeling a little out of it. My skin. I just feel very sensitive to the light. Almost like I could control it. It doesn't hurt. I can just feel it. It's hard to explain. But Brett, said Max, there's hardly any light in here. True enough. The only light that wasn't blown out was the one given off by the monitor on which Brett had been playing Metroid.
What does it all mean, Chris?
What does it mean? We don't know just yet. We'll have to wait for a later installment to see just where this is all going and how it turns Brett into Captain Nintendo.
I want to be Captain Nintendo.
But I guarantee you it has something to do with piping hot coffee. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, yeah. What's her name again? Tara Bates?
Tara Bates.
Yeah. Do you think that's a play on terabytes? I don't think terabytes existed when this comic was written.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. I wouldn't say it's out of the realm of possibilities. Might be right.
What are the other
names?
Max Randles?
Brett Randles, and I think Max...
I'm pretty sure Brett Randles is an adult film star, but I can't...
I don't think I want to go there, so this seems like a good opportunity to say that is it for this week.
Mm-hmm.
As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you would give us a rating on iTunes or tell your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud.
Stay classy, Chris Hoffman.
And my secret nephew, Morton Koopa Jr.
Morton!
We will see you next time.